This is The Guardian.
Wer die Finanzen eines Unternehmens managt, ist oft beschäftigt. Sehr beschäftigt. Sehr, sehr, sehr beschäftigt. Konto ist das All-in-One-Geschäftskonto, um Ihr Unternehmen zu managen. Egal, ob Sie selbstständig sind oder die Finanzabteilung eines mittleren Unternehmens leiten. Mit Konto erledigen Sie alles in einer App. Geschäftskonto schnell eröffnen? Erledigt. Ausgabenmanagement? Erledigt. Buchhaltung und Reporting? Erledigt. Konto. Das Geschäftskonto, das zu Ihnen passt.
Wir bei Vertex wissen, dass die Geschwindigkeit des globalen Handels zunimmt, was eine Steuerverwaltung komplexer macht. Und Ihre unternehmenseigenen Systeme sind nicht dafür ausgelegt, diese Steuerkomplexität zu bewältigen. Hier setzen wir mit unserer Plattform an, die Continuous Compliance ermöglicht. So erhalten Sie mehr Transparenz, mehr Genauigkeit und mehr Vertrauen in Ihre Steuerdaten. Sie wollen mehr über Continuous Compliance erfahren? Dann besuchen Sie vertexinc.com/de.
This week, Politics Weekly is in the leafy London suburb of Chingford and Woodford Green, where a very public spat between Labour and the now independent candidate Faiza Shaheen has been dominating politics for the last few weeks.
She was a huge advocate of Labour, and it's just awful the way she was treated.
The Tory veteran Sir Ian Duncan-Smith has represented this area for more than 30 years. But in 2019, Faiza, as the Labour candidate, came very close to beating him. So, can Labour's new candidate, Sharma Tatler, replicate that success?
I've got track record of delivery, and I'm best placed, should we get a Labour government, to negotiate and push the Labour government to make sure we deliver for the constituency.
Or could the Progressives be at risk of splitting the vote, paving the way for a Tory win? I'm John Harris, and you're listening to Politics Weekly UK for The Guardian.
It's like living with a rock star now. It's like it takes 5 hours to get anywhere, 5 hours to leave anywhere.
What, since it happened?
Since before that, actually. But it's, now it's even more intense.
Yeah, it's kind of ramped up.
We're canvassing with Faiza Shaheen outside her old school in Chingford. She's got a three-month-old baby strapped to her, and we can't get far from all the well-wishers.
The mother and a toddler both with Faiza stickers on.
You didn't set this up.
Set this up.
Faiza was, until last month, the Labour candidate for Chingford and Woodford Green. But with only 6 weeks to go before the election, the Labour Party blocked her from standing over tweets she had liked that had supposedly breached the party's rules. Faiza, a long-standing Jeremy Corbyn ally and outspoken voice on the left, is now running as an independent candidate. But with this comes the risk of her splitting the progressive vote.
I wouldn't have done it had they chosen someone local. It's just the way that someone was parachuted in here that people are like, I'm not going to vote for this person. And I just felt like it was contempt for this community, just the way it was done, and
so
kind of no regard.
So it's not fundamentally what was done to you, which obviously people have all sorts of objections to, right?
Yeah.
It's the fact that the replacement candidate wasn't somebody from here. That's what did it and convinced you to run as an...
And like the local support, just how many people wrote to me, how many people felt that saying that they felt really disenfranchised by this decision, given that they already knew me. There was an 22-year-old now that wrote to me and said that I'd visited his school when he was 18 and he was just really looking forward to voting for me, and now he's just not going to vote.
What happens if you have enough momentum to make a serious showing, the progressive, so to speak, vote gets split and Ian Duncan-Smith gets a thoroughly undeserved another go?
Well, listen, I've been fighting ideas for a long time. Ian Duncan-Smith is
But that must be on your mind.
It is on my mind, and that's why it was a really difficult decision to make, because I don't want him to win. But at the same time, and I don't mean this in an arrogant way, I think, you know, from the candidates that are running, the serious candidates that are running, I still think I'm going to be the best representative for this area, and I think I'll do the best job
True, but we've got a messed up electoral system.
We do have a messed up electoral system, that's true.
And you can still let the Tory through.
No, I'm not going to lie, I'm worried about that. But from what we're getting from our canvas returns is that actually it's Labour that's splitting the vote, not me. As soon as they deselected me, people were annoyed and were like, I'm not going to vote Labour. So they already undermined their ability to win here.
And how are you after it happened? I mean, I ask you that because, you know, I meant to be dispassionate, but, you know, ask you sort of journalistic questions. But I've met you quite a few times down the years. Yeah. And just on a human level, to know the amount of work that you put in, right? And then suddenly, right on the brink of an election, it all gets snatched away. And it's almost like the suddenness with which it got snatched away was the point, right? Like to say, we can do this if we want, right? Yeah. How did that leave you feeling? And you must still be feeling like that to some extent.
Yeah, people keep asking me how I am, and it's hard to explain. It's been such an emotional roller coaster. Yeah, I think I was so shocked and just felt utterly betrayed in the beginning. And I, after all of the work, like you say, and just also the way that I was being spoken about, like I wasn't a high quality candidate, which, you know, it's really rude.
Were you surprised in that? Surprised? You can't have been that surprised.
Well, I mean, I always make jokes and would say that, like, if I don't get kicked out, but I did think that it was not, at that point, 6 weeks before an election, you know, less than 6 weeks was too late.
I mean, one can make the argument that they were only tweets and retweets and all that, but you've apologised for one of them. Do you think you made it a bit too easy? Because at least one of them was a bit dodge. I mean, you said it played into a trope.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought about it a lot. I think that they would have used anything. If you look at the tweets that they told me to go through, I mean, it was insane. 2014, my friend running as a Green councillor, wasn't even a Labour Party member. There was one tweet which was a sketch of a John Stewart thing. I don't remember liking, but which is the sketch that actually kind of both sides the argument, which is interesting. But I hadn't fully read. There was like a long Twitter tweet that had come with it. And, you know, there was part of that that, you know, some would argue plays into a trope. But one part of that was talking about the Israel lobby, which is true in America. It's an American sketch. It's APEC.
It's language that jangles nerves with good reason.
Yeah, but at the same time, it is in the American context. They're called APEC, like it's not a conspiracy theory. And that's what the sketch was about. It was about the US.
The Labour Party isn't just Keir Starmer and his people, right?
Yeah,
you and I both know, right? The Labour Party and the Labour movement are a huge thing, right? And they are on the verge of winning government and evicting this awful, awful regime from power after 14 years. I don't know how you feel about this question, but do you still feel hopeful in some way about that change?
I think I feel like a lot of people that I just want to see the back of the Tories so badly. It's been such a difficult time for this country. And I worry that the Labour Party has become too narrow in its politics. And a lot of people are voting tactically because they feel just want to get rid of the Tories. But it's not necessarily that they're really excited about Labour. And actually, that's kind of what we're picking up on. In terms of the support for me, is that like, oh no, you know, Labour Party doesn't feel like the Labour Party.
But in an alternative universe, if what happened hadn't happened, you would be standing on that manifesto, presumably, and finding things to enthuse about. You know, working people or nationalising the railways again.
Yeah, so there were some things, and that I'll still defend. And of course, if I get in, I'll still vote with loads of things for the Labour Party. I mean, it wasn't me that left the Labour Party; the Labour Party left me, right? So. There'll still be things that I definitely agree on. But I also think that we are being, not we anymore. I also think that
you gotta
it's
lose
so
that
hard,
habit.
I know. Maybe... It's so hard. I worked so hard for Labour for so long. And my values are Labour's values, you know. And that's the thing that's so harsh about it and so cutting. You know, there's lots of things I'll agree on. And there'll be lots of things that I think that they should go further on, like the two-child benefit cap, you know, and other things that need more investment and, you know, rethinking things on like wealth inequality and wealth taxes. And that's the work I've been doing for 20 years on inequality. So, you know, that we'll need voices with a huge majority government that Labour are likely to have to push them a bit. Otherwise, we end up being a one party state, which I think we don't want.
What's striking? Is it because this is a sort of ad hoc improvised campaign? It does feel a bit more sort of relatable and human, doesn't it, than a lot of party campaigns? She's out campaigning with her husband, just sort of chipping in at the interviews, and it's, you know, there's no a press officer. That's what it is. There's no press officer.
As we walk through the streets of Hyams Park, it's the Vote Pfizer posters we see more than any other, including at this house we try our luck at. Right, we're on a very quiet upmarket residential. I wouldn't call this a street. Might be an avenue, this. And one of these houses, it's a nice semi. It's got a big Vote Pfizer poster in the window. I want to know why. Hi, I'm really sorry to bother you. We work for The Guardian, the newspaper. We make their podcast about politics.
I hate politics.
Well, why have you got that in the window?
I know.
That's what I just wanted to ask you about. I was just curious to know.
Because of the way she's been treated. She was a huge advocate for Labour. Like, she was so committed to the values and everything. And when I spoke to her, I don't know her that well, but when I spoke to her a couple of months ago, I was like, how's it going? Are you going to stand? And I met her when she was canvassing, and she said, yeah, I'm staying with Labour, committed to their values. And all of a sudden, she got this shock. As a new mum, who's just had a baby, I have a child, and it's just awful the way that she was treated. We've got to get IDS out anyway.
Yeah, you don't worry that you risk him staying in if the anti-IDS vote gets split.
Well, it was bound to happen when she got deselected, I thought. If that hadn't have happened, I think she would have won.
So in other words, if IDS stays in, it's the Labour Party's fault?
Yeah. They started the ball rolling. They shouldn't have done it.
Right.
But they don't care. I don't think they actually care because they're going to win.
Notwithstanding all that, it's probably going to be a big moment, right? This party that's been running the country for 14 years in a pretty disastrous way is going, right? How does that make you feel, the prospect of them not being in power anymore and the Labour Party being in?
I'm not going to second guess any of it. I haven't got a magic wand or a crystal ball or anything like that.
You don't feel a tiny little sliver of hope?
In all honesty, no. I don't think Labour and Conservative are that different anymore.
Yeah, you sometimes see this when sort of big distant political bureaucracies screw up and are thought of as being sort of cruel in their treatment of people and arbitrary. People don't like it. Reminds me a bit of Ken Livingston before he became a somewhat doubtful figure. When the Blair machine tried to stop him being the Labour candidate for mayor and succeeded, he then stood as an independent and won, right? It's quite a London thing as well, you know. Don't tell us what to do. But also here, what that woman talked about, which was this sort of sense of Pfizer Shaheen being local and the local being something you have to fight for. You don't get the sense that this is quite the sort of anonymous suburb that it would be made out to be. And so the idea then that this distant machine comes along and takes away their Labour candidate is not going to play well. It's like an offence against their community spirit. That's the way she sees it. We talked to you for like 1 minute.
Okay.
Do you live around here?
Oh, yes.
Why do you say it like that?
Yes, I do.
You lived here for a while?
Yeah, 37 years.
Wow. Outside Hyams Park Station, Julie tells me the area has become younger and more diverse over the years. So it's no surprise that it's become a key Labour target.
It has. A big cultural mix. Big cultural mix. Yeah.
There's much more diverse. That means that despite the local support for Pfizer, she's still up against the Labour Party machine.
I'm undecided. I'm not a Conservative person. I'm a Labour person, but I'm really not sure. Who can you believe?
Why aren't you sure?
Because you can't believe what they say, and there's not going to be a magic tree, a money tree in that Downing Street garden, is there?
No, really,
that's going to fix everything just like that. I will vote, but I'm wavering.
But if you
at the
don't
moment.
Vote Labour, who will you vote for?
Well, we've got a good independent girl.
You know about what happened with her, then?
I do.
How would you describe it?
Not nice.
That's interesting. Do you know the name of the Labour candidate?
No.
Labour
but candidate.
The name of the independent candidate.
I know she's an Asian lady and she lives locally. And
yeah, so you're sort of more aware of her than you are of the Labour candidate.
Oh, absolutely. Round here, yes, definitely. Yes, definitely. Okay. She's got a lot of support.
Sounds like you're sort of quietly a bit cross about what happened to her.
I am. It's all politics, though, isn't it?
Rough business. Horrible sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Alan, you've lived here for a fair old while, is that correct? How long have you lived here?
42 years.
Wow, okay. Because time was, this was thought of as maybe
a quintessential bit of outer London that was full of a certain sort of white, let's be honest, Tory voter, right? Has it changed in that respect?
I don't particularly mix with that many Tory voters, but firmly hope that Labour get in. I'm sure they will. I can't see anything that they won't. Well, they won't. But...
And you've got a vote round here. What's your sort of opinion or understanding of what the Labour Party's done as far as its initial candidate, Faizer Shaheen's, concerned?
It looks really awful, doesn't it? The way it all happened, it was really quite nasty.
But she's standing again. You're a sort of habitual Labour voter, by the sound of it.
Yeah.
Would you vote for her?
No.
Why not?
Because I vote for Labour. Duncan Smith's majority has been eroded over the last three or four elections. Let's do it. I'd be absolutely over the moon if we did that here.
Can you name the Labour candidate?
You're going to bear with me. She came from Brent.
Yeah.
God.
He's got the same surname
ST.
As a magazine for upper class people, coincidentally.
Tatler, yes, yeah. Indeed.
Sharma Tatler. This is Woodford Town. Woodford Town.
Outside Woodford Football Club grounds, we meet Sharma Tatler. Obviously, your candidacy here is relatively new, shall we say, and people, or some people perhaps, don't know much about you. Tell us about yourself and why you're here and what it's all about.
So a little bit about me. I'm a single parent. I'm a former teacher, counsellor for 10 years.
What did you teach?
History and humanities and politics at secondary level. And I came into politics, actually, that was my route through into politics. I came into it in my early 30s, saw Michael Gove and see what he was doing to education, and
what
it was a recruiter. Well, I didn't like the emphasis on kind of the learning styles and how he was approaching learning, really emphasising each individual child's progress. And I just think that actually I, rather than shout at the television every week at question time, let me get involved and do something. And within a couple of years, I was asked to encourage to stand for local council, and I've been their councillor ever since. And I stopped teaching about 8 years ago to look after my husband before he passed away, and I've done that ever since, raising a very mouthy 15-year-old now.
Okay. Now, obviously, you don't need me to tell you that you became a candidate in, as some people would say it, controversial circumstances. That Faizer Shaheen, who had been the candidate here in 2019, suddenly wasn't anymore. And she now feels very sore about that, perhaps understandably, and is an independent candidate. How do you feel about all that?
It's not ideal. And I think my premise has always been, as a Labour politician, as Labour councillor, is actually our focus has to be on the communities that we're seeking to serve. And there are people out in Chingford and Woodford Green who are really struggling, whether it's the business owners or, you know, I've spoken to thousands of people, hundreds of people, who, you know, I spoke to one resident who waited 7 hours at Whipps Cross Hospital for a blood test, or a mum who's got an autistic child who's struggling to get send provision. So that's where my focus really is. And it's not ideal to come in this way, but as a Labour Party, we have to be focusing on the communities that we're seeking to serve.
People we've spoken to, I was quite surprised actually, knew it. You don't have to go very far or try very hard for people to talk about it. And some of the people we've spoken to see it as an example of sort of national political machines meddling in local affairs, the idea that it's some sort of distant bureaucracy denying local people a choice and a voice and so on. And that's not hardened political people. These are just sort of everyday people we met this morning. What's your answer to that if they say, well, you know, this only happened because of people from outside the community?
I think there's people who still have a choice. Chingford and Woodford Green still have a choice. She's standing as an independent. There's a choice on the ballot paper. You know, and the conversations we've been having, nearly 12,000, that doesn't come up to us on the doorstep. What comes up is actually they're wanting change.
And if some people said that between that and Diane Abbott, they happened at the same time, it was indicative of the party machine being very high-handed with women of colour, still being said now, actually. What's the answer to that?
Well, I'm a woman of colour. I'm not sure whether that applies. I think that actually the party have to look at kind of the candidacies and see who's best to serve their communities.
Feel sorry for her, for Faizer?
It can't be easy. I don't deny that. But, you know, I can't say more than that, really. It's about kind of the communities we're seeking to serve. And that's my entire focus.
Here's a question. It's a sort of paradox at this election. A lot of people that I speak to, they acknowledge or feel that it's time for a change, right? That things need to change. At the same time, as they're very sort of weary and exhausted. They've been hit with one thing after another. And therefore, they're quite sceptical about the idea that actual change might happen. You're nodding. You sort of pick that up. Tell me three things that, notwithstanding those limitations to do with fiscal rules and all that, and what the Labour Party will be able to do. Tell me three things that you feel confident you can say to people will have changed.
Wilkes Cross Hospital, getting that off the ground in redevelopment, getting more police into the constituency. That's one thing that everybody's talked to me about. And getting more teachers in the classroom. They're the three things that I think are tangible, very quick wins that we can actually get done very quickly. But I think onto your point from earlier, I think the second thing that I say to voters is, one of the reasons I think I've got the candidacy is I've got a really strong record of delivery under Tory austerity. I've delivered council homes, I've delivered medical centres, I've delivered a special needs school. I've done that as a councillor under Tory austerity. So I've got track record of delivery, and I'm best placed, should we get a Labour government, to negotiate and push the Labour government to make sure we deliver for the constituency.
Beim Big Mac sind sich alle einig. Schon probiert? Den legendären Big Mac gibt's jetzt in zwei weiteren Varianten. Den Double Big Mac für den doppelten Genuss und den Big Mac Bacon TS mit knusprigem Bacon. Nur für kurze Zeit und nur bei McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. In allen teilnehmenden Restaurants, nur solange der Vorrat reicht.
Any forward progress in technology involves some rational assumption of risk. And the way Google is thinking about that is, okay, how do we proceed both boldly and responsibly, because the promise of these technologies is just so overwhelming.
Google's chief privacy officer, Keith Enright, talking about their approach to AI and privacy.
Take On Tomorrow from PwC's Strategy and Business, available wherever you get your podcasts.
We might be in the last redoubt of Tory England here. There's a huge mock Tudor house, the sort of gentle sound of someone strimming the front garden. It's a very big car, possibly a Range Rover, reversing it at the drive. And over there is a statue of Winston Churchill. He was the MP for this area when he was in his pomp and just after. There's been unbroken Tory representation here, I think I'm right in saying, ever since. We're about to go meet Sir Ian Duncan Smith, the current Tory MP, who, if the polls are to be believed, might be the last of the line.
Oh, here he is.
Sir Ian Duncan Smith, I presume.
Hi.
How do you do? Nice to see you. Here's a question. A lot of your colleagues have decided to call it a day at this election, particularly with a track record as long as yours. Why are you still fighting it out?
Because I love doing it. I mean, I've always taken the point, I say this often to my colleagues and others who want to listen long enough, that this is not a career. This is a vocation. And my view is, look, unless you are rooted in the idea that you're here on public service, that you enjoy seeing people, enjoy trying to solve their problems, then you really shouldn't be here anyway in the first place.
Well, you're standing again partly because you enjoy it.
I do. I love being in contact with the people here. I've always done. I've done my level best for them in whatever I can. You know, something, you can't win everything, but generally that's my view, and it's part of what my ethos is.
But you're having to fight harder now. This is a marginal seat now, as most. But you're why are you chuckling?
Because I've never stopped fighting hard.
No, but you know what I mean. This was a safe seat, say, yeah, 20, 30 years ago, and it's
safe for granted. But I just generally, early on, yeah, right in the early years. But it's been a tighter fight for some time, really.
Are you having a quiet chuckle about the Labour Party arguably committing an unforced error and tying itself up in factional knots? Yes, you just chuckled.
Well,
so
I chuckled at the question, because the one thing I always say to everybody is I don't really focus on what they're doing, because if I do that, I'll never get round to my campaign.
It will help you, potentially.
I have no idea. It just depends what happens between them, really. As I say, I'm not going to, as Napoleon used to say, don't interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake. And my answer is, it's nothing to do with me. What they do is up to them. But the reality is, it does tend to show the autocratic power of the Labour Party stepping in at the last moment.
What, people don't like it?
I think lots of people feel uneasy when political parties start throwing their weight around locally.
Yeah, okay. What's your message about the Tory record over the last 14 years in this election?
First of all, it's been probably been the most difficult 4 to 5 years in the 32 years that I've been here that I can ever remember.
Go on, that's interesting.
Well, because, you know, government gets elected. You've got big change with Brexit to get sorted and get done. But right on the start of that, you get hit by COVID. And then just as we come out of that, after 2 years of finally getting the vaccines and all the rest of it done, which they did well on, then suddenly Ukraine gets invaded by Russia, and bang, down go the cost of fuel, down goes the cost of living, everything else is a problem. And the result is the government gets blamed. The honest truth is, I don't detect going round. I detect literally no great love for Labour.
But that cover a private eye at the Titanic saying I'm not detecting any great love for the iceberg.
It doesn't really matter if you hit it. No, it's not that. It's really, if you go around here, you'll find anybody will say to you, they don't. I mean, I was here in 97, right? In 97, they could
people
tell
were not
you.
Walking around with Tony Blair t-shirts on.
Well, I'm telling you, you're wrong. Here, I had conservatives saying they were voting for Blair. And they made their minds up about it. They knew exactly what they were going after.
There's a lot of talk in the Conservative Party about the immediate future of the party, particularly if the party loses this election. And some of your colleagues, so Ella Braverman, for example, are talking about uniting the right, and that somehow the answer lies in a sort of merger, whether formally or kind of politically, between Mr. Farage and what Reform UK represent and the Conservative Party. You're identified with the Brexity wing of the Conservative Party, right? How do you feel about that idea?
I wish they'd all shut up, frankly.
But that particular idea...
I don't buy it. No, I don't.
Moving to the right.
I don't buy it.
Tell me why.
Politics isn't as simplistic as that. Politics is much more complex. The economy is complex. People are complex. The process that you do is you have a set of values and beliefs, but you don't suddenly trade them as though those that originally shared one bit of your beliefs will travel across to some other place that you want to go to. The fact is, it's about a negotiation. It's a negotiation endlessly in politics with the public about what their priorities are, whether they overlap with yours, and whether you're seen as the people that will represent them.
And what sort of Conservative Party would you like?
I'd like a party that remembers, first and foremost. It's a party that believes that the economy underlines everything completely. What I'm after is us making the right decisions on things like migration. But it's not the same as screaming and shouting that somehow every bit of migration is wrong.
Okay. Well, therefore, you wouldn't welcome Mr. Farage into the Conservative Party, would you?
Well, I have known Mr. Farage for many, many years. do you know, honestly, I think the Conservative Party is quite capable of sorting itself out, and it doesn't need outside influence.
Full of outside influence
at the
moment.
It's getting a lot of it because times have been difficult. So when it's difficult, the government's on the back foot because of so much that's been difficult in the course of the economy and the running of the country in the last few years because of all those problems that I talked about.
Yeah.
And the answer is everybody is there with advice. Telling you what you should be doing, but not one of them has managed to do it. That's the difference.
No. Okay. Right. Last question from me, anyway. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
All right. Not bad.
Good.
You're going to lose.
No. Are you?
Was that a question or a definitive statement?
I don't know.
We'll see. If you lose this seat, will you still want to be involved as a powerful voice in Conservative politics?
I probably will be anyway, but I don't have any plans because I intend to win this seat. But,
intend to, but can you? It doesn't look good.
Yeah, well, you know, I've had this thrown at me now a number of elections, and as I say, news of my death is much overrated.
That's good. Great. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Yes.
Okay.
There is a big question hanging over Faiza Shaheen's campaign and what's happening in Chingford and Woodford Green, which is about two people competing for the progressive vote, in quote marks, and the danger of splitting it and letting Ian Duncan Smith back in. And you can't brush that away. But at the same time, I always instinctively like people not doing what they're told and responding to being badly treated by not putting up with it. And there's, you know, a lot of that swirling around. And in an election campaign, which isn't that high on hope, you know. People want change, but any expectations they've got are being dialed down. Somehow in the act of saying, I'm not having this, she ends up looking arguably the most hopeful candidate we've met so far. Which isn't a bad achievement already, I suppose.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, make sure you subscribe to Politics Weekly UK wherever you get your podcast. Also, I want to point out to you another of my day jobs. I recently returned to Stoke-on-Trent for our Anywhere But Westminster series. Head to The Guardian's YouTube channel to watch the latest episode. This episode was produced by Frankie Toby. The music is by Axel Cacoutier, and the executive producers are Maz Ebtahaj and Nicole Jackson.
This is The Guardian.
Any forward progress in technology involves some rational assumption of risk. And the way Google is thinking about that is, okay, how do we proceed both boldly and responsibly? Because the promise of these technologies is just so overwhelming.
Google's chief privacy officer, Keith Enright, talking about their approach to AI and privacy.
Take On Tomorrow from PwC's Strategy and Business. Available wherever you get your podcasts.